The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a Swangled
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. We couldn't do it without you. If you want to connect with us, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at Macroaggressions. Big thank you to the sponsors. They make the show happen, so I've got to get sponsors that make sense for the audience. Legal Shield has been in business for 50 years in the United States and Canada, and they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. What they do is they take it's the collective buying power of all of us directed towards high-powered law firms in your area. So it gets you access to attorneys at a very, very reasonable price. How reasonable? Like a dollar a day. It's $29.95 a month. It will get you access to an attorney that can help you out with a variety of things, including contracts, getting your legal will, last will and testament, legal power of attorney, financial power of attorney, medical directives, all the things that you need that you probably don't have. You got to get those documents, get them, put them in your safe. But if you go to an attorney, it's going to cost you a couple $1,000s. But I have a solution for you. We're all about solutions here, and we've got one. So with Legal Shield, if you sign up for their program within the first month, just set up an appointment with your attorney in the area and knock all these documents out right away. Just take care of that. If your work is asking you to sign an employment contract that has some weird language in it about agreeing to take a medical injection in the future, and you have questions, send it to your attorney. If you've got red light traffic camera tickets here in the U.S., if you've been pulled over, you got a speeding ticket, send all that stuff to your attorney. Let them sort it out. That's what they do. Maybe they can get you a better situation. So I'll tell you what, if you think this might be something that sounds up your alley or you know somebody that might like it, just go to the website and read for yourself. www.don'tgetpushedaround.com is the place to do it. You can find all kinds of interesting programs that they have. They have ID Shield. They have a small business plan. If you run a small business, if you're somebody that carries a gun, and they have legal documentation for things like that. So they have quite a bit going on over there. Don'tgetpushedaround.com is the website to check it out. Also, thanks to EMP Shield. Hopefully we don't need their products, but in sticking with the theme of this show, it is better to be, I don't know, a couple months early than one day late. You don't want to be buying the EMP Shield the day after the EMP goes off, or the Chinese spy balloon, or the solar flare, or the whatever. I mean, realistically, you're protecting yourself against lightning strikes, and it does a fantastic job of doing that. It's many times more efficient than a single-use military design. It can handle up to 40 EMP strikes. It is fitted to the household circuit breaker with just four wires. It installs like a Type 2 surge protector. You can do it yourself. There's installation videos on their site, on YouTube, or you can just have an electrician come out. It'll work on your car. It'll work on your home, your RV, your boat, your generator, whatever you've got. It'll fit. Take a look. Go to empshield.com and read up about it. And if you find something you like, use the promo code MACRO, and it will most definitely save you a bunch of money on the way out. Plus, they have bundle packages. So if you want more than one, they've got you covered over there. Well, it's time to get into the fun stuff. We've got Dan Dix here. If you are unaware, how dare you, first of all. But secondly, go over to pressfortruth.ca and check out what Dan's doing over there. He's back from Bilderberg. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Dix. Hey, Dan. Good to see you again. How are you?
Yeah, you too, man. I'm very well. Good to see you. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Thanks for being on, and let's just jump right into Bilderberg. I mean, what did you get Henry Kissinger for his 100th birthday? That's what I really want to know.
Yeah, man, 100 years old. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see him. He made his getaway, his little escape there at a private airport where I was kind of, on reconnaissance, kind of like hunkered down at the main airport where I managed, you know, we managed to talk to maybe a dozen Bilderberg members, but some of the big guys like Henry Kissinger was off in his own little private area. But our friend did manage to get some photos of Henry Kissinger there. So I'm kind of surprised the guy's still kicking. I mean, I think he's lost all vision in one eye. He's obviously down to a wheelchair, but he's still coming out to these things. Somebody there was telling me like they're completely consumed with an all-out lust for power and wealth, so much so that they're so work driven that it apparently sustains them to being like 100 years old. I don't know what you think about that, but
find something that you love as much as Henry Kissinger loves destroying the world, and you'll never work a day in your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's weird. It feels like they have a lifetime contract because we've got all the old crypt keepers in Congress here in the United States. Dianne Feinstein looks like she's just like they dug her up and, mm-hmm. and put her in Congress. They just want to continue to go for as long as possible. I guess if I had sold my soul to the devil, and was facing the imminent, you know, meeting with him, I'd want to postpone that as long as possible. So they're very into extending their life. They're very into staying in power as long as they can, probably a defense mechanism too. But I'm curious though, what was the theme of Bilderberg this year? You'll eat the bugs, I know, is normally the theme of the World Economic Forum, but you guys went to Portugal. How long were you there for? And what was the theme overall of this event?
I was there for 9 days in total. And from what I gathered, I mean, you can never really go by the official, you know, agenda list. But from what I gathered from actually speaking with some of the attendees who were remarkably candid with me, I was able to gather that it was a very tech-driven meeting this year, and also a very European-driven meeting. So I think some of the main points of topic were artificial intelligence, this new technology that is emerging, and also which sort of European nations may or may not join NATO, and you know, they continue to discuss the Russia-Ukraine war. So usually It's based around issues surrounding Europe and North America, but this year seemed to be a little bit more focused on the European issues, particularly Russia and Ukraine. And as I said, AI was a big topic this year. They had some of the major players there. So that's what I gathered. And that was from speaking with mainly, there's one particular, I think he was a journalist, maybe for the Financial Times, who me and my friend Josh managed to talk to at the airport. And he openly, a little caught off guard, this is when you get some good info out of these guys, said to us that the main takeaway for me was AI. AI was the main discussion. We're like, oh, whoa, okay. Whoa, thanks okay. for the info. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, world domination wasn't maybe printed on the agenda, but it's always on the agenda. You know, it's always sort of in the background. So I wonder, artificial intelligence in Ukraine. Oh, what could possibly go wrong there, right? Like World War III. I'm wondering what they were talking about. I mean, and I know I'm asking you to speculate since you weren't actually in the meetings, but my question, I guess, is they're talking about whether to add additional countries into NATO. We've heard that recently. We've heard them talk about whether Ukraine would be admitted into NATO. And you've got some people saying that'll never happen. They're too poor of a country and too janked up on the inside. It'll never work. And then you have others that say, oh, that's been the plan all along. I wonder, what do you think about the idea of Ukraine getting brought into NATO as a way to, well, really, I guess maybe as a way of like self-preservation for that country?
Yes. I mean, that's been on the table for quite some time, but that would obviously, you know, escalate things to a massive scale, because, you know, over the course of this, you know, last couple of decades, it has been NATO and its allies encroaching on and upon and around Russia, which is kind of the main kind of reasons for this. Now, I'm not like taking any sides here. There's a lot of bad things that can be said about Putin as well. But when you take a step back here and take a look at things, there's so much more going on here. So, I forget your original question.
Well, I wonder if we're talking about the Scandinavian countries being brought into NATO. We're talking about, right. This creep. And like you said, it's been a creep ever since the early 90s. Well, we're not going to move any closer. Well, then we did. And then, well, not we, but NATO moved a little bit closer and a little bit closer. And they're going to get to the point where their goal is to encircle NATO or encircle Russia, and to the extent that they can. And you have Russia saying, listen, Ukraine is our line in the sand. Like, don't even think about getting involved in that country, because if you do, we will go to war over that. And now here we are, we're in a situation where they have been going to war. What do we do? What do we do with Ukraine at this point? Pull the plug, get out, cut our losses and leave like Afghanistan? Or do these psychopaths in Washington, D.C. and Brussels decide to double down and say, no, we're going to, not only are we not going anywhere, but now we're going to bring in Poland and we're going to bring in Germany and we're going to bring in all these countries that have a long history against Russia and maybe have some scores to settle, and we're going to get them involved. Does that seem like this seems like World War III, like on the horizon, is it not? Not asking for trouble?
It does seem like that. And when you have so many people getting involved, the Canadian government has been all over this as well. I think he might just recently was in Ukraine, him and Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland, who, by the way, I saw at Bilderberg. It's the first time she's been officially documented as having attended this this event. She's like the number two to Justin Trudeau, you know.
Yeah, she's a World Economic Forum. She's a Rhodes Scholar, which means she's sent to destroy from the inside, and deeply connected with Bilderberg. She's a dangerous person. I mean, all kidding aside, she's a dangerous individual who does not appear to have much of a soul. So, God, I mean, you've got two-spirit Trudeau, and then you've got her as a double whammy. Boy, this is. We're in no better shape here in the United States. Don't get me wrong. We got Biden and Kamala Harris, but are you guys trying to make a run for the worst 1-2 combo in the world? Cause you're in the running.
Yeah, no doubt. No, I know. The rest of the world is starting to see just how much of an embarrassment Justin Trudeau is. And his little sidekick there, she's certainly no better. And now that she is, 2 years in a row now being selected by Bilderberg to be in attendance, this is interesting, especially when you consider, like, over a decade ago, she used to write, like, papers that would speak out about, you know, what she called the hereditary elite or just this class that she thought was out of touch, and, you know, the WEF, the Bilderberg group, who now she's openly admittedly a member of. So it's like, wow, she sure has come full circle, like, in the last 10 years. But as we know, often when you see certain people like her at Bilderberg, it's just a few years later, they end up in high positions of power. In Canada, like Stephen Trudeau is a perfect example. He was invited in 2003. Couple years later, he's selected as Prime Minister of Canada. I think Bill Clinton might be another example of somebody who was just like a young governor who was invited and he becomes president. There's many others too who were later in life, end up in high positions of power. So she might be selected for something very big, maybe not Prime Minister of Canada, possibly, though. But certainly she's going to be somebody to keep an eye on moving forward, especially with their interest in her right now.
Yeah. And she's a dangerous person to watch. You're right. These meetings, they always bring in like the high-ranking prospects that are sort of in the minor league system, and they'll invite them to the meetings, and they'll get them sort of up to speed on things. Bill Clinton, like you said, yeah, he went through that process a while ago.
They're almost like a recruiting organization of talent scouts who are kind of, throwing it out there, inviting certain people. People need to understand there's truly an inner circle within the inner circle, if you will, of Bilderberg. They're really kind of scoping out some of the young up and comers to figure out who's going to play along with this. Who can we rope into our inner circle here? And who, might be at risk of, exposing us or going rogue or whatever. And it's at this meeting where they figure out who they want to continue to pull in on the inside and place in high positions of power later down the road. So that's why I've been, so adamant about covering that particular meeting, for the last, I think, 16, 17 years or whatever it's been.
How many have you been to?
My first one was in 2006. And so that's a long time ago. And then I went consecutively from 2012 right on up to 2020. So that's nine of them right there. 2021 was canceled. 2020 canceled, 2021 canceled, 2022, I wasn't able to go. I was a prisoner in my own country, not able to fly out of here. So I went 2023. So that marks 10, actually. This year was my 10th Bilderberg, I suppose.
I think they make you a member at that point, don't they? Or they shoot you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like one of those stamp cards, like your 10th visit, you get a free bullet in the head, I guess. I don't know. At the rate you're going, because they clearly were onto you. That's one of the things I noticed, that with your reporting, you showed up and you're like, they know who I am. Like they knew you by name when you came in there. Yeah. You didn't make me a little, you should have made me a little badge or something I could have worn, a scarlet letter. They could have gotten you a scarlet letter at the very least.
Well, when I was in Germany, I noticed I was getting stopped in the street by police every 5-10 minutes. At one time, I had gotten detained like 15 times in the span of just one day of walking around there. And I found out they were actually instructed to do exactly that. Anytime they saw me, they were told to stop me, ask me for my ID. Essentially, they were instructed to harass me the entire time I was there. And I found out that's what they were instructed to do. And I don't know if you knew this, but one German police officer actually tried to sue me for filming him. And it turns out when I was there, I had to do the research that he wouldn't be suing me as a police officer. He'd be suing me as a private citizen, because in Germany, You can be both a public and private citizen at the same time. It's crazy. It's not the same where I'm from. Here in Canada, the moment you don don that police uniform, you are a public servant. I can film you, you know, and all that stuff. Not over there. They can he can sue me not as the German police, but as a private citizen. So I ended up finding out they threatened me if I didn't take down my video that I'd be sued. I found out at the time that YouTube had just introduced this blur feature where you could blur somebody's face after the fact. So the video is already being uploaded. So I went in, used the feature, blurred their faces out, and never, ever gotten any kind of trouble from the German police. But
so what you're saying is that the German police are trans, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you figured it out.
They're trans. Sometimes they're private sector. Sometimes they identify as cops at that moment, I guess.
Yeah, whatever. Whenever they choose to. They're fluid, really. You know, they bounce back fluid. And forth. Yes. Yeah.
It's the thing about the Germans. Yeah. I think you can go to prison for just making that joke in Germany. In fact, at this point, man, what a crazy world we're in where you can't even talk about, you can't even talk about real issues without having them threaten to sue you. That wouldn't be the first time you were threatened to be sued, though, right? Didn't Jessica Yavin try to sue you or get you dragged into court?
Didn't try to sue me, but I definitely had a day in court with the guy, and I recall him, you know, looking over at me in fear and asking the judge to, you know, conduct this without me in the room. And the judge just laughed this off and was like, no, he's gonna be here. But I don't know, for your viewers who might not be familiar, Jessica Yanoff is this guy in Vancouver who took advantage of, you know, the transgender ideology by scoping out these Chinese, waxing places and saying that he called them up. Yeah. Can I get an appointment for a wax? Sure. Yeah, sure. No problem. Oh, by the way, I'm a trans woman and I want to get a Brazilian wax job. You know what I mean? Like on his private parts. And these ladies are going, we're not familiar with how to do that. I'm sorry. We haven't trained our girls on how to do that. And he tried to sue these people. So he went after like three or four, salons, and the whole thing backfired on the guy. He ended up, having to pay in, for this. He ended up getting into big trouble. We haven't heard from him in a long time because I think all his attempts to, what would you call, steal from people, has been exposed. So thank God we put an end to that monster.
Yeah, that was really weird. But I'm sure there's some fellows in prison that would happily help him wax his balls if he wanted to. But that's maybe a different show. God, what a mess. Ed, let's talk. I'm curious about this because you guys in Canada we're talking about Bilderberg. We're talking about, you know, their plan for world domination. And we know that when you get into discussions about one world governments, you often find the depopulation component attached to it. Now, there's nothing really new about that, except that in the last couple of years, but recently, in the last 2 years or so, in Canada, you guys have introduced MAID, Medical Assistance in Dying. Mm-hmm. And this is the option that people have to end their lives and to do it their own way. Now, in the States, many, many years ago, we had an issue with Jack Kevorkian. He was Dr. Death. He was a guy that was going around helping terminally ill people end their lives at their own discretion and timing with his suicide kit. And he wasn't, by all accounts, he wasn't like a bloodthirsty maniac. He was more of a guy who just kind of had this setup, and it was very weird and controversial. And it was maybe the first time people had heard about medical assistance in dying. But now we get to Canada, and what did I see that the numbers were last year? Or was it maybe it was the year before? 10,000 people took the Canadian government up on this. What in the hell is going on in your beautiful and amazing country that is being run by lunatics? What's medical assistance in dying, and why is it so fucking popular in Canada?
Well, it started back in 2016. This is when this thing was officially, you know, passed into becoming a law and they were able to start doing this. And it started out as this idea that, yeah, we're just going to help terminally ill people who are struggling, who want to end their lives, to do so in a peaceful manner. I discovered back then through a series of interviews that this was certainly not the case. I interviewed a lady who was working in a hospice, and the government was funding them. And when the hospice refused to go along with this service, this maid service, the government said, we're going to cut your funding and completely shut you down. When I heard about that, I interviewed the lady who worked at this hospice. And that's when I found out that the hospices that do it, they have like death parties. They have like, you can arrange to have, you know, your room look however you want. You can have the music you want. You get your last meal. They try to make it all fun and happy. And at first that sounds fine and dandy for somebody who's, you know, whatever, making that decision, they're struggling, they're in pain or whatever. Well, slowly over time, what ended up happening is the Canadian government started pushing this idea on people who were just homeless, people who were suffering from depression, people who were suffering from addiction issues. One guy was just struggling to pay his rent, and just as an easy out, he wanted to just, you know, go ahead and commit suicide and have the government help him do that. And he was like one little check mark away from being approved from this, when thank God he ended up changing his mind. But it just goes to show you, you know, the state at which we're at. Like you said, 10,000 people took up the government on this offer last year alone and did this. It's absolute murder. It's absolute genocide. It's absolutely insane that our country has done this. And I remember the Kevorkian stuff. That name is almost like become synonymous before all this with like the doctor of death, this big evil kind of guy. And now it's just like this normal thing in Canada. I mean, absolutely unbelievable what's happening here. Yeah, so it's pretty disgusting. But the scary thing is this is showing no signs of slowing. Unfortunately, the numbers just keep growing and growing. Because you've got a society here that they keep just depressed and confused and pushing all this kind of gender ideology nonsense on children who grow up confused and depressed, and then they offer them the solution. Go ahead and kill yourself, and in fact, we'll help you do it. It's absolutely crazy.
It's the ultimate problem reaction solution. You know, the government creates the problem. The reaction is, this place sucks. I want to kill myself. Get out of here. And then they offer you the solution as well. Do they incentivize you, or do they the person that's going to die, do they incentivize their family, or do they incentivize the facility in which this is happening? Like those homes were paid money for doing this?
Yeah, those homes were receiving funding from the government, and any of those who refused to do it stopped getting the funding. So the government is kind of pushing it on the old age homes, the hospices they're called, to do this stuff. And if anybody who doesn't want to go along with it is either forced into it or essentially kicked out. And so they're definitely pushing it on society right now at a incredibly heavy pace. And it's ridiculous. It's insane.
I mean, Trudeau should just try it out just for publicity's sake. Just give it a shot. Just let's try it out on him. Let's see how it works. That'd make me feel a lot better. It'd improve my mood if we could put Justin Castro in there. What is this? How much longer does this guy have in office? Is he kind of, I'm not familiar with how long he's been there. It feels like he's been there forever, but and probably more so to you than to me. But how much longer do we have to wait for this guy before he is removed?
Well, that's kind of the thing about Canadian, you know, politics. It's not quite like the same how it is in the US, how you have a maximum of 8 potential years that anybody can serve. It's very different here. He could potentially just continue almost potentially serving forever. I mean, he may call a snap election soon. That's currently being talked about, but I don't think there's any plans. Well, there's something coming up in 2024, but he could essentially, he'll almost have been in for almost a decade now. And it is quite potential and possible that could continue. Now, I don't really see that happening. People are getting really fed up with the nonsense that he's pushing. He's a feminist. He is a trans rights activist. He's, you know, been fed with a silver spoon ever since being a baby, propped, molded, and shaped for this position. Most people are pretty much fed up with him by now. So, I mean, it's tough to say if he's going to continue, but I'm sure you know how the game goes. You know, usually the replacement is pretty much worse than the problem currently in there. So, yeah, it's tough to say how much longer he's gonna last, but we'll see.
Could you imagine being groomed your entire life for this position to be the prime minister and to have all your father was, you know, the everyone that you grow up, and the best you can do is be Justin fucking Castro to be this bad at your job? It's like you had your entire life to get good just for this one thing, and you're this bad. The man of a thousand disguises, you know, the guy who will be whoever you want him to be. Whether, you know, you've seen the compilation pictures of him as an Indian, both dot and feather, you know, and like he's got a million different, he's been in blackface at least four times and that I could count. So like what a husk of a human being. They just fill him up with his all these agendas and he's a soulless robot. What a perfect, well, in a weird way, kind of a perfect encapsulation of this agenda, just soulless and devoid of anything remotely resembling authenticity, just fake everything, fake ideologies. He's like you said, a big trans rights activist. Like, well, what does that even mean? You know, like, what is that?
You know, when he was initially selected back in 2015, he first appointed 50% women to his cabinet. And when he was asked, why did you do that? You know, why did you make 50% of your women, you know, your cabinet women? And his answer was, it's 2015. Basically, it's the current year. We got to get with the times, man. Women's rights, right? So it has nothing to do with who's qualified for the job or anything like that. He was just kind of taking that position, and he continued with all that stuff. This is the guy. He actually changed the lyrics of the national anthem that used to say, in all of our sons command, and now it changed it to in all of us command, to so-called be more inclusive. This is what we're dealing with there. And again, of course, I'm sure you guys have witnessed the trucker protests that's, you know, now heard around the world, that he famously used the Emergencies Act to shut down, freezing people's bank accounts and stuff like that. The man is an absolute tyrant. So I kind of think his days are numbered. But then again, he's so perfect for the powers that ought not be right now for running Canada. So it's tough to say what they're going to do.
Yeah. What was your role in the trucker convoy? What were you out there doing during that? I remember thinking, oh, this is really great, man. Here we go. Our brothers in Canada, they're going to step up and do what we in America fantasize about doing, but never actually really do. The Canadians are going to do it. Look at them. They're doing it. They're doing it right. And we were all cheering for you, like, oh, this is great. It's getting bigger. Oh, you're making these guys crazy. There's some dude in Ottawa who's losing his mind because they're honking the horns and I'm going nuts. It's like, you know, we were rooting you on and cheering and cheering. And then it all kind of came to a crashing halt. It felt like Trudeau got pulled into some meeting and they said, I don't give a shit what you have to do. You get these truckers out. You stop this. You know, you have the full authority to do whatever you need to do to shut this down. What were you doing during those times? I don't remember your reporting, but something tells me you were probably out there talking to truckers.
Yes, absolutely. I was. As soon as things started getting pretty intense, I decided to go there. Me and my wife couldn't fly there because we're unvaccinated. So even within Canada, domestic flights within Canada were still not allowed at that time.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought that once you got in, you were good to go move around. But no, not even.
No, we couldn't even fly within our own country. And Canada is a big country. So we live in British Columbia. Protests is going on in Ottawa. This is like a 5-day drive. So, you know, me and the wife packed up our dogs. We hit the road for Ottawa in the dead of winter. And I got there just in the nick of time to film the clampdown. And it was insane. Let me tell you, I filmed a 7.5-hour live stream on the day that they officially clamped down. And it is hands down the most intense footage I've probably ever filmed. That's saying something.
Because you stick your nose into a lot of businesses where they would appreciate you not being there. Yeah, I would suggest you have some great footage. Wow, this is the most.
It's 7.5 hours of just jam packed, crazy, you know, glued to the screen kind of action. And it was the moment, as you said, that they decided to flip the switch. It's like as if they had that meeting and they were like, this needs to stop now. And it was so relentless. I ended up taking a baton from a police officer to the ribs. The guy hit me so hard with this kind of emotion, as hard as he could into my side. Probably fractured, maybe cracked, most likely bruised. But I was feeling that for almost a year, probably a little over a year. I was feeling the pain from that hit that I took from those thugs. So they were very serious about clamping down on the thing and shutting it down. My YouTube channel has since been terminated.
Where can people find that footage?
Well, if you use the search feature on pressfortruth.ca and you just type in, you know, Ottawa protest, Ottawa truckers, you should be able to find it. I do have a backup of the 7.5 hour live stream somewhere, but unfortunately I'd filmed that on YouTube. The channel has since been terminated. So that live stream is no longer, you know, like out there right now. I do have it backed up, but that's how that goes. So
a little surprised you still had your YouTube channel going at that rate at that time. Most people were gone. I'm sure yours was down and up and down.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Actually, they killed my YouTube channel in 2020. It got fully terminated. I had no community guideline strikes, no copyright strikes, no warnings, no nothing. Just all of a sudden, poof, gone. And that was like that for 7 months. Then all of a sudden, completely out of the blue, 7 months later, I get a message from YouTube on Twitter. Team YouTube on Twitter says, "We're sorry. We apologize. We've made a huge mistake. We've reinstated your channel. We're sorry for any inconvenience." And out of the blue, I got my channel given back. And I was just as puzzled looking as you were, going, okay. So I got it back and I started using it for the next year, even though I was still continuously heavily shadow banned. And then all of a sudden, just last year, it got terminated again. And now it's gone for good. So I don't know what was happening there behind the scenes at YouTube. Maybe a good guy back there was like, no, we got to make this right, and undid whatever these leftist extremists did to me. And then they were able to do it again. I don't know. But at any rate, it's all gone now. But that's okay.
If you're a software engineer looking for a job, please get a job at YouTube and go undercover and covertly plug a bunch of our channels back in. We would deeply appreciate that. Are they getting you guys in Canada with the 15-minute city talk yet? Or is that strictly UK? No, that's you guys too.
Yeah, no, we're already starting to, like, Vancouver, Montreal, and I think Calgary have pretty much already signed on to this. Three cities are in. They're like, yeah, bring it on. Vancouver is already working on it. I'm pretty sure there's already signs going up talking about 15-minute cities in downtown Vancouver. So like it's beyond, like, it's not a conspiracy anymore. It's happening. They're building it. And it looks like Vancouver, don't quote me on this, but I think Vancouver, either Toronto or Montreal, Vancouver and Calgary are all signed on to this.
This is terrifying. I had Richie Allen talk to me about this. He said that he had heard years ago from somebody that they were talking about doing this, where they were going to block off your access to certain roads. And he said, well, how are you going to do that? And they said, this person told them they're going to dig into the ground and submerge a big pillar that can pop up and in the middle of the road and just block the road. And he was like, what? This is crazy. But that was years ago. Flash forward, and now he's seen this play out exactly as his friend, who was, I think his friend was somebody that was on like a city council somewhere, and they were talking about how they were planning this, but this was years ago. And now to hear it, that it's coming your direction, that's terrifying. That's crazy. You can't live in a city where they restrict your movement like that. That seems like it's got ramifications for all sorts of it, delivery jobs and you know, what if you live one place and work in another? I mean, well, how are they going to police this? Have they talked about that? Are they going to, how are they going to police it? Are they going to go to a situation where like you're allowed to drive your car on, with your, if your license plate ends in a, you know, in any of these letters or these numbers, you're allowed on this these days. And if you're not, like in the 70s, we did that here in the States with like your license plate with regard to filling up your gas tank when we were having like big energy crises in the late 70s, they did that. I could just see a situation where they're like, well, you know, you're not allowed to drive your car 3 days out of the week. And
yeah,
you have to figure it out. What are they telling the people of Vancouver that, what to expect? And when
no,
this is
not
coming?
Exactly like that. I think it's going to be a slow, gradual rollout. You know, at first, people are going to have to be sold on the convenience factor. And they're going to have to sell this thing on not only sustainability, this is going to be good for the environment, good for the planet, but it's just going to be much more convenient for you. It's not until once they get into it and they're comfortable with it, that some of these kind of ideas that you're talking about are going to start to be introduced. But I think we're already starting to see this idea introduced through, you know, lockdown ideas, you know, post-pandemic, and even throughout the course of this fire in Canada that's currently raging. Nova Scotia issued essentially a lockdown. People weren't able to go camping, walking on trails, going in provincial parks. And I believe that extends up until June 25th. So there's a form of lockdown happening in Nova Scotia, Canada, right now because of the fires. And of course, we've all already experienced it, you know, post-COVID 1984, what that's like. So that was just like a little taste of what people may one day experience in these 15-minute cities. But as I said, it's going to be an incremental move, you know, before we get to that point. They're going to make people comfortable with it first.
Well, speaking of these fires, I just read a headline that said wildfires could last all summer and that there's 435 fires burning. This is according to the federal agency, Natural Resources Canada. What? 435 fires? What's going on here? What do we, I mean, allow me to put on my tinfoil hat for just a second. I mean, I get a little suspicious when I've got nothing to be suspicious about, as Wilfred Brimley said in The Firm. This is crazy to me that there would be this many fires. I understand it's summer and lightning strikes and whatever. I get all that. But I've lived through a bunch of summers in my days, and I've never seen anything quite like this. Are we conspiracy theorists for asking the questions about the origins of these fires? I mean, does this seem like something that's natural? You've lived in Canada forever, right? You know what's normal, what's a normal summer fire season, and what's not. How is this stacking up compared to the previous years you've experienced?
There's nothing normal about it at all. I mean, we've gone through, you know, El Nino cycles. We've gone through certain changes in the climate that have, you know, affected, you know, fires here in Canada before, but not to this extent. This is something like completely unprecedented, never, ever before been seen. And, you know, now the times are different. We have access to things that we didn't before, like satellite imagery, for example, that recently showed, I think it was around 14 separate fires that appeared to have been lit at the exact same time. And we're talking about over a span of, I think, 150,000 kilometers. So wind isn't a factor here when you see these plumes starting at the same time. So this begs the question, what the heck's going on here? Is this arson? It really comes down to the my hop or lie hop. You know, did they make it happen on purpose? Or are they letting it happen on purpose?
Yeah.
And I actually made a short kind of almost like a documentary film about these Canadian fires back when there was one at the Fort McMurray fire in Alberta in 2016. And recently I started seeing some very serious similarities to that one. And really you can really chalk it up to state failure. I mean, anytime we have these kind of major, any problem really that we deal with in Canada comes down to a failure by the state. But in this case, yeah, it's that times about 100. And it seems like they're going to continue to let these things rage. As you said, I don't know where you saw that, but I wouldn't be surprised if that article is correct, that we're going to see these things right on through you know, the summer, who knows, maybe right into next year. As I said, we'd never seen anything like this before. So crazy.
I was waiting for the reporter to say, yeah, it's going to last all summer. It's on the calendar, you know, because it kind of felt like that. There's a whole lot of, you know, it's like, look, these could last all summer long. And it's like, that's a weird thing to say. Do you know something we don't know, the reason why this might last forever? But again, like you were pointing out, make it happen or let it happen. I mean, in California, they talk about how they want to go to electric cars and everybody's got to be electric and you're going to plug into the grid. Well, the California power grid is a disaster. And there's all these forest fires that constantly burn every year during the summer months. And it's nothing new. I lived in California for 30 years and it was always like that. But the difference was that there was always a budget for clearing the brush and fire mitigation and setting back fires and clearing out debris and doing all the things that you know you need to do in advance of fire season. Gavin Newsom doesn't do that anymore. And so they're like, oh, we've got these fires, they're just happening. So when you said let it happen, my mind immediately went from one psychopath in two-spirit Trudeau to Gavin Newsom, American Psycho, who's out there letting it happen as well. So sometimes you don't really need to have diabolical governmental interference. You just, sometimes the best thing they can do to create havoc is to just get out of the way, right? Just let these things happen on their own.
And not only do nothing, but stop others from trying to actually do something.
Right.
I don't know if you saw the clip. There's a group of retired firefighters in Canada who contacted, you know, the main people you contact, saying we can offer backup assistance. We're not talking frontline assistance here. We're retired, but we have the know-how, we have the skill. The guy said his group that he put together had over 200 years of experience amongst them, and they can back up, because for whoever is on the front line, there's like three guys behind him helping him do all sorts of things. These guys offered those services, and the Canadian government's like, nah, that's okay. Thanks, but no thanks. You know, we're good. We got this. Even though, like in Quebec, for example, they've applied for the funding that the Canadian government gives out to firefighters and firefighting programs. They still have yet to get it. They've admitted that they only have the resources to fight like 30 of the 160 odd fires that are going on over there right now. So they don't have enough people. People are trying to offer their services and the government's sitting there saying, nah, thanks, but no thanks. So yeah, it does seem like it's a case of letting it continue to happen on purpose.
God damn. We get that here too. A lot of this incompetence, and you get a group of people that say, well, we'll step up and offer our assistance. And the government just goes, no, we're not interested. And you go, why? Why is that? Because you're clearly not doing a good job. As it is, we've got people that will offer their service. If you say no to it, then that makes me suspicious of them. Of course, I'm suspicious of these people all the time, but I think that that's probably, look, I mean, in New York City, they got a taste of your fires a couple days ago. They got a nice orange post-apocalyptic wake-up call when they went outside and looked like the end of the world. But it's Canada today. It's the United States tomorrow, because we very easily could be burned down to the ground too, and have Joe Biden say that he thinks it's stunning and brave and isn't going to, you know, allocate any more resources to putting, you know, towards fire mitigation because it's all gone to Ukraine, right? So these guys are just putting us in a dangerous situation and then acting surprised when we voice our displeasure with them. Like, I feel like I'm living in a cartoon these days.
And then try to claim that it's just man-made CO2 that's really the cause here. That's what we really need to blame. What we really need, and what's really going to stop this from happening, is taxes on the factories that are pumping out all this CO2. I mean, I wish people would see through this total hoax and scam for what it truly is, this climate change, global warming nonsense. But that's what they're going to go after here. You know, we already have carbon taxes here, but they're going to try to ramp that up globally, worldwide, I think, as we see more of these types of fires and things happen. And it's all by design.
What do carbon taxes in Canada look like right now? What is that version of it? Are people aware of it? Is it just talk? Is it really actually getting implemented? Or
yeah, I mean, it is actually getting implemented. I'm not an expert. I can't really like speak to that, but you know, taxes, what's that?
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's everywhere. They do it here in Vancouver, just on your basic purchases, on like a glass bottle or a plastic bag or gas or whatever. It's right there, you know, on your receipt sometimes. So yeah, it's happening here. But I don't know. I don't pay too much attention to it. But I know that that's going to be what they're going to be ramping up moving forward as a result of these fires.
Well, and they probably talked about it at Bilderberg, my guess, carbon taxes. We know the United Nations, and we know that the Club of Rome talked about the idea of using climate change, green, global warming, whatever the name is, as this precursor to create this one, this carbon tax, which would fund the one world government. All the times you've been to Bilderberg, I would think that by now you could basically predict the future. Because you've sat in on these meetings, these guys are always plotting and planning things 5 years out, and here we come. So at this current Bilderberg, you've got AI, the European Union sort of focused on that, and the role of NATO. So we know where things are going in the short-term future. What's the future of Canada like? Are you optimistic about things? I mean, or are you thinking that it looks like it's time to reevaluate living situations? I know when you and I were talking in Mexico, you were like, this is the first time I'd been out of the country in a couple years. Mm-hmm. So like, is this the calm before the real storm, or what do you think?
You know, I thought Canadians were doing pretty good in terms of, you know, realizing what the true struggle is and what the true solutions ought to be and that sort of thing. But when the COVID 1984 scamdemic hit, it was very revealing about just how much more work there is to do here in Canada. And you could tell that just by simply looking around at how many people were just donning the masks, you know, and without question. So really, I don't have a whole heck of a lot of hope for Canada. Unfortunately, we have far too many people who are far too glued to the TV. But this begs that question, where do you go, right? You know, yeah. Like, I mean, I'm born and raised here. My family and friends are all here. You know, don't get me wrong, I'm interested and we're looking elsewhere. But you get to a point where it's like, where do you go, you know? So sometimes you have to just fight those battles right there on your own soil. So I'm probably realistically going to end up sticking around here in Canada, but who knows, man? Things are getting so crazy. We might have to take off, but we'll see.
I know it. There's something to be said for knowing how to navigate throughout your own situation, knowing people, knowing how the process works, and you know, we're all sitting out on a bench in Mexico having tacos, talking about how great it would be to, you know, to live here. But in actuality, what happens if things go wrong in Mexico? If they go wrong in Mexico, I don't really know what to do. I don't know who to talk to. I don't know where to go or how. I don't know the culture that well or the language at all enough to be able to really, lay low the way I could in the United States or you could in Canada. So it's an interesting sort of dilemma that we have. It's like, be careful where you run to until you know if that place is going to be safe as well. But, you know, people always talked about like, oh, Donald Trump's building these walls to keep all the illegals out. I was like, be careful of those walls because they might keep us in if we ever decide that we want to leave at some point. And of course, the wall, the proverbial wall did keep you in over the wall at the airport, at least the wall around the airport kept you in where you lived for 3 years. So this could be a future in which we don't really have as much flexibility to travel as we would like to. I'm not interested in participating in that, right? Are you?
Well, no, but this is why, you know, we've started focusing on this idea of homesteading. But not only that, it's not just growing your own food, living on your own property, but as you said, you have to do it with a community or a network of like-minded people who you can kind of work together with. So, you know, we've got some friends that we're in talks with, and you know, a lot of my friends are doing exactly this. kind of making the rounds, figuring out who might want to go in on some land together, who might want to get in on a place and stay within a relative, pretty close distance of one another. Should things go awry, we can help one another. But I think that's what it's going to come down to now is focusing on that private property, but also community feel moving forward. So that's kind of our focus right now is finding the right people, the right place, the right land, but then pulling that trigger and just going for it and not really hunkering down, but kind of. I mean, but we're getting to that point, you know,
being less dependent on the state for things, you know, for food. Yeah. or protection or whatever. You know, you've got to have options out there. Speaking of the state and options and things like that, you and I talked a little bit about crypto in Mexico, but like what's the role of crypto in Canada? Because we saw this kind of jump into the forefront with Bitcoin for the truckers, and then their wallets getting blocked or taken, or I wasn't really sure how it all worked. I thought if you got it to a sort of a ledger wallet, I don't think they could take it, but I don't know if that's what wound up happening. But what was the role of crypto what is the role of crypto in Canada, especially with respect to how it sort of burst onto the scenes with the truckers and got demonized along with everything else?
Well, what it should be about is about, you know, freeing people from the controls and the clutches of the government and getting their finances under their own control and taking the responsibility of maintaining their own finances in their own hands. That's what it should be about. Unfortunately, what's happening in Canada is, like all the people who go along with the masks, I think a lot of the people are going to go along with the centralized digital banking currencies. So they're not necessarily interested in the decentralized, like, you know, Bitcoin and the privacy coins like Monero and things like that. They're more so interested in what's safe and what's regulated and what's something that the Bank of Canada will say is sound and solid. And this is CBDCs. So I wouldn't be surprised if Canada ends up being one of the leading four, you know, the leading countries to implement a centralized digital banking currency. Obviously, some other countries are already onto this, but the Canadian banks are already starting to prep the minds of the masses for this. They're doing polls, they're doing surveys, they're just kind of putting it out there right now. Because that is Canadians' future. We will have a digital, centralized digital dollar. I think the role should be about, you know, freeing yourselves from the clutches of the government, being able to keep an eye on and track and tabs on everything you do. But unfortunately, that's exactly what it's going to be if we fall into this trap of CBDCs. And the Canadian government seems to be pushing it pretty hard, along with the Bank of Canada as well. They're full on right now, all about the CBDCs.
Not surprised. I'm not surprised. I'll tell you, there is a little tiny bit of good hope with regard to CBDCs, and that's that Nigeria just said, we're not interested in this. They rolled that out. They had half of 1% uptake with it, and they made things really difficult with people so that they couldn't get money out of the ATM or withdraw it out of the bank. And it was very small increments. They were capped per week, and people just said, I'm not dealing with this. This is ridiculous. I think a third of the population of Nigeria transacts in Bitcoin right now. That's what I heard, which is a massive amount. I think Nigeria is about 130 million people. So that's a lot of people that Wow. have some Bitcoin. They may not have a lot of Bitcoin, but they're going that direction. You know, we sit through those conferences and those presentations at an Acapulco, man. I feel like I want to go out and get as much Monero and Bitcoin and whatnot as I can, because I certainly don't want to be in a situation where the bank can turn off my ability to transact because they just don't like the things that I talk about or the things I write about or whatnot. I mean, I feel like that's coming. It's coming for you in Canada. It's coming for me in the States, and it's coming for anybody that allows it. This seems like, I've kind of said it before and I'll say it again. I feel like central bank digital currencies, the prevention of that is most definitely the hill to die on, because if they can get you to incorporate that into your life, then they've got you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, people often say, you know, well, oh, that's all fine and dandy, but what happens when they flip the internet switch and, you know, and they kill the power and all your Bitcoin's gone, you have no access to your wallet or whatever. And my argument is, if they do that, your Bitcoin wallet's going to be the last of your worries. You know what I mean? If they go out all out on that kind of a move, you're going to be fending off the zombies at the front door with a shotgun. Forget about your Bitcoin wallet. So, but this is another reason why we can't just be focusing on digital as well. We have to get the tangibles, silver and gold, you know, is something that I talk about all the time. I think we need to physically hold some of that ourselves. Obviously there's problems with like, how do you store it and stuff like that? But that's something I think we need to look at moving forward as well. Bitcoin, gold and silver, and physical, tangible gold and silver, not stocks, not, you know, these kind of options, but actual gold, actual metals in your possession. I think people need to really focus on moving forward as they continue to crash the dollar and move towards, you know, that we have to protect our own assets by putting it into Bitcoin, silver and gold.
If your biggest problem is, where am I going to put all this gold? Then it's a good problem to have. If you're like, well, where am I going to store it? Where am I going to store all my gold and silver? Well, not in a security deposit box at the bank that can get broken into by the bank if they want to. Keep it someplace close to you. But if you're running out of room to store all your gold and silver, give me a call. I can help you out on that. For sure, it'd be my pleasure. What do you have? What's next? I know you're always on the run. You're always not. From the authorities, well, maybe from the authorities, but what are you planned to be next for, to cover protests, to cover events, to speak at events? Where are you going?
You know, to be totally honest, I take everything day by day. I don't have any speaking events or rallies that I can think about that are coming up in my very near schedule. So in that case, I just kind of take it day by day. You know, we never know what the news is going to present us with tomorrow. And, you know, I'm always trying to go out and find those things as well and break those stories as well. But I'm essentially taking things day by day at this point, because there's no shortage of craziness and crazy things to be able to cover these days. So, I mean, yeah, no major projects, no big documentary films or anything like that. But I just want to focus on continuing to, bang out solid content, you know, as much as I can from day to day. That's the focus right now.
When news breaks, Dan is out there trying to fix it. So where's the best place for people to find you to support your work and to follow everything that you're doing?
Well, pressfortruth.ca is probably the best place. I am on BitChute, I'm on Rumble, I'm on Odyssey, I'm on Minds, I'm a lot of these, all these platforms that are far better than YouTube and far more less likely to censor me. So you can find all of that at pressfortruth.ca. Right at the very top, you'll see some banners for all that. And then if anybody wants to support my efforts, there's always pressfortruth.ca/donate as well, if anybody wants to financially contribute to what I'm doing.
Well, if you've got more money than time, give your money. If you've got more time than money, then give your time and take Dan's stories and share them to everybody that you can. He's doing outstanding work, Dan. You know, you're the best. You're the best out there. You know, we always appreciate your bravery getting right in the middle of all the insanity out there. That's Dan Dix, pressfortruth.ca. Check him out. If you want to support me or check out the work that I'm doing, you can go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon. We'll be right back.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.